This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From our position 75 and Fitzhugh on the 11th floor, where we are watching the demolition of the Leaning Tower of Dallas. It is the G-Bag Nation here on number two.
I would say attempted.
Yeah.
They failed once, and they're currently failing again.
They're going to get this thing down one way or another, aren't they? Brick by brick.
Yes. Yeah. Right now it is partial brick by partial brick.
Oh, man. I bet they'll get more aggressive with that thing and start swinging a little bit harder once the traffic thins out. Get these people off the service road about 3:30 a.m. Really start swinging that thing.
I could take that building down faster with a screwdriver and a hammer.
I would bet on you right now.
I'm pretty sure.
I would absolutely bet on. Okay, let's get the very latest coming out of the combine. Steven is talking. Steven Jones, the Cowboys COO, and we are going to have that audio a little bit later on in the afternoon. But right now, we're able to take a look on Cowboys Twitter and see some of the tweets that are going viral. Steven Jones addressing the media. To me, it's the best thing about the combine. All these guys talking. Agents trying to cuss out front office guys behind the scenes and those leaks coming out. But every day it's like somebody important's talking, whether it's a coach or a GM or an owner of a team or something like that. And Jane Slater standing by as Steven's talking. We'll give you some of the highlights there. And then the other stuff in this NFL draft big board report. Steven says they've had low to non-existent activity on negotiations with Dak. They last talked in September. Negotiations stopped when they were there and we were done where we were. Says nothing acrimonious, though, and he's still their guy. So at what point would it change? Because this is where the conversations would start, right? In Indianapolis at the combine and ahead of the March 10th deadline and the franchise tag situation. I think at this point it's not a surprise that no additional conversations have happened. But if we get to the end of the combine, would that raise your guys' alert?
I'd be very disappointed if I was the Cowboys. That they could not have gone and had some type of face-to-face. That's just a great opportunity, a great setting to do that, a great place to get a deal done. If you don't have any progress, that's a big-time failure right there.
That would show that we're probably not going to get anything done. It's franchise tag time if they leave Indianapolis without any meaningful conversations had. You there with us, Jeff, on
that? Yeah, especially because March 12th is your deadline. And shortly after, March 12th is a deadline to franchise tag somebody, and shortly after, free agency starts. So you don't know for sure what's going to happen with the CBA. You don't know for sure if you're going to be able to tag two players or one. And so if you can't get the quarterback's deal done, then you may have a problem trying to keep somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you could easily give him 36 right now. That would set the market, wouldn't it?
It would. Russ at 35 is the top.
You could look at it like, guys, we can't wait. You know, maybe we don't want to give him 36, but we're not going to want to give him 39 next March.
Why didn't they just go ahead and do it then?
I don't know.
I didn't mean to point the finger at you and say, okay, then why? Because are we going to look back on this and say, heck, this should have been the number all along? Yeah. This should have been the number.
Could have been 33.
It should have been.
Maybe it could have been 28 or 30.
Once they made the determination that they weren't going to do anything, and now they said, okay, well, the season's over. We got to go do this. Okay, well, we messed up. You know, we didn't get it done before the season started. We got to do it now. Here's our number. Let's go do it.
And isn't your chances of getting a low cap number greatly diminished once you move past the rookie deal? I mean, that fourth year on a rookie deal allows you to tack on six and use that $500,000 year to eat up some of the hit.
Yep.
Now every year that's going to be on this contract is going to be accounted for in the APY at a massive number. I feel like the only way the Cowboys didn't do it last offseason is they were curious. They weren't sure. They're saying they're sure. I think you have to be sure now. You don't walk away from a quarterback with this kind of profile going into a second contract. Maybe you don't give him a third. But yeah. I don't know if you can find any other team with a quarterback that's matched this profile that's moved on after a rookie deal.
I'll tell you what, I just look at it and say, you know, they missed a great opportunity to get, like you said, you know, they when Jerry kept coming out and, you know, talking to people on that staff, and Jerry kept questioning. He goes, "Is this our guy? Is this our guy?" That's when I started to become worried about the situation.
Yeah.
But you know what? If Steven's still saying, I mean, again, it's one of those things that Steven's talking out of one side of the mouth, and maybe on the other side he's saying, maybe not so much.
Well, yeah. Like, their actions say that they're not sure he's the guy. Because when Tony Romo was here, we didn't have to play games with tags and let's haggle over what the exact dollar amount was. He was your guy. He got what quarterbacks get.
Yeah.
Even other teams with guys from the same draft, they got to where they got to, and they said, well, it's obviously our guy, so sign their extension, and it's right in line with what the market says they're worth, so boom, Wentz and Goff are done. Dak's not. Why? Because either you're being very frugal, or his side is being way aggressive with what they want.
We want 42. You know, that would be understandable if they're saying, we're not even talking to you unless it's for 40. Then you're like, fine, well, call me when you're ready to reset the market.
But I would imagine, what I imagine is going on is the Cowboys are not totally sure, and that's why they've offered what they're comfortable offering, and Steven sounded so comfortable with not budging from that. Huh. Like, we went to where we were good. They weren't going to come down from where they were, so there was nothing to talk about. You don't say that if it's a guy you have no doubt he's your franchise quarterback. You get the deal done.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think Steven's the one holding up on this. I really
okay.
do.
All right, good insights there from Brian Broaddus. As we're going over Jane Slater's tweets, she's standing and listening to Stephen Jones talk. These tweets are only 10, 15 minutes old. They don't have a firm meeting with his agent, Todd France, this week, but hope to meet with him. Our goal is to get it done with Dak. He wants to be here. We want him to be here long term. Says he was surprised the deal didn't get done at the beginning of the season because we all thought it was close. Yeah, we heard about that. Jerry said it multiple times on his weekly radio shows here at The Fan that he, you know, was feeling something was getting close, but then it started to fall apart. Is something else on Dak before we move on?
Yeah, do you think maybe Dak was worried about Garrett being here long term? Do you think maybe that's why they backed up? Do you think it just kind of occurred to me, though, that maybe Dak didn't sign the extension because
he didn't want Jason?
Well, he didn't know who the head coach was going to be.
That would be an interesting theory.
I'm trying to figure out why.
I would say I believe the Cowboys brand is big enough that it wouldn't matter who the coach is. As long as it's not somebody Dak hates. And maybe even then, what are you going to do? Go play for a guy that you like in Cincinnati or play for a guy, you know, with the Cowboys? And I don't know. I think the power of the star, and if you're successful here, all the money and success that comes along with it would be too much to turn down. Stephen Jones says he talked to Cowboys wide receiver Amari Cooper and his agent at the Super Bowl when I asked him to characterize conversation. Very upbeat, said Stephen. We haven't really gone into any details with any players since the end of the season. They'll really want to see where the CBA is. So they're trying to get a CBA done before. Wow, that's
that makes sense that the players have approved one and they're going to wait and see if the players. The owners have approved one and they're going to wait and see if the players are going to approve a new CBA because I think that'll give them a better idea.
That's interesting.
How to structure deals.
That must mean they feel like there's a good chance a deal gets done. That would be exciting to get to just. Jump
wouldn't
past.
Be exciting for the Cowboys.
Oh, because of the two tag thing?
You lose Amari Cooper, probably.
I mean, but you know what? You can do tag stuff. But as a fan, knowing for a whole year we don't have to worry about the NFL going away, I'll take that. That's worth the Cowboys losing a tag. And I don't know. I do think they're going to get a deal done with Dak and have the one tag left for Amari. Goes on to say that on the contracts of Dak and Amari, as with past players, when things get momentum, they can happen in 24 hours. It's just a matter of can you get some traction and get headed in the right direction, okay? It is an NFL draft big board report, and we'll have more, including the audio from Stephen Jones. We'll talk more about that a little bit later on here on The Fan. The Detroit Lions have the number three overall pick in the draft, and GM Bob Quinn over the weekend says he's open to trading the number three pick if the right offer comes along.
Mm-hmm.
Franchise currently has one pick in each of the first six rounds of the 2020 draft. Last April, Quinn made a similar comment about trading back from the number eight spot, but the Lions never made a deal. Open to any trades. Those are conversations that generally the higher you are in the draft, the sooner the conversations begin. So that could have a lot of intrigue as the draft approaches.
I still don't have a firm grasp on what catbird seat means. Like, yeah. Is it a cat who's up there on top watching a bird down below? Or is
it's kind of like Katie Barr in the door. You know, it's unclear
exactly
what
but
this
means. But the Lions are in the catbird seat, whatever that is, especially if this thing goes off the way that people are thinking that it might. Say Joe Burrow goes one, Chase Young goes two, and then the Lions look around and go, are there people out there that wanted a quarterback? Hello, we have a pick here, and if anybody wants to come take a quarterback, you just let us know, and we'll take a giant haul, and we'll figure out which. I just wonder how far would you want to go down? Because if I'm Detroit, what I don't want to do is I don't want to leave the area. Now, this is assuming that you believe Matt Stafford's still your guy. Matt Stafford's still my guy, so my pick is for sale if you want a quarterback. I wouldn't want to go past Carolina because I don't want to lose the very top.
Yeah.
My very top-level prospects of non-quarterbacks is maybe pick an offensive tackle or two, Auburn's D-tackle Derek Brown, Ohio State corner Jeff Okuda, Isaiah Simmons, the Clemson linebacker. I don't want to leave those. I want one of the elite prospects in this draft. So if you want to come get your quarterback, you probably got to be coming from nowhere below seven, give or take, if I'm Detroit. That's the haul I want.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think all along Carolina's the team it's going to move. I really do. Now,
new coach.
Yeah, they might lose out on Joe Burrow, but to have the opportunity to draft the second-best quarterback, I think that would be something that they would welcome as well.
All right. It is the G-Bag Nation's NFL Draft Big Board Report. We do it every day at 3 o'clock leading into the April 23rd draft. Story in the USA Today about one of the best players who was a combine flop. Many people in this area very familiar with him, Orlando Brown Jr. And he still hasn't heard the end of it is the story that I read. It's kind of a funny one. 2 years into his NFL career, teammates, coaches, even opponents in the heat of Sunday's games will remind Brown about his historically bad scouting combine. The Ravens' starting right tackle reckons he spews plenty of trash talk himself, so no need to name names. But, quote, obviously it's something that people talk about. I had someone tell me I bleeped off $100 million at the combine.
He lost a lot.
Yep.
It is what it is, and he says, it's who I am. He ended up doing 14 reps on the bench, second fewest this century for an offensive lineman. And he ran a 5.8 5.40, second slowest at the combine in 2018. So he was not working out very good at the combine. Baker Mayfield had his back at the time. Says, when you're going to watch Orlando Brown, when are you going to watch Orlando Brown run 40 yards downfield? Never. Look at his film, said Baker. He gave up zero sacks last year. He ended up going third round, 83rd overall, and one of the biggest losers in combine history, Jeff.
I think that might be, it's one of the worst combines ever. You know the have you seen the spider charts that you can make to show how athletic they are compared to other people at their position? I'll try to illustrate it for the people who are listening. So what you do is you take every drill at the combine, and if you do very well at that drill, then your spider graph will be huge. You'll be towards the outside because it goes by what percentile you are. So he was in the 92nd percentile for height, 96th percentile for weight, 95th percentile for wingspan. He is balling right now. He's in the 9th percentile for his 10-yard split, the 1 percentile for his 20-yard split, the 1 percentile for his 40-yard dash. Like, everything athletically, it was the worst combine I can remember.
Wow.
And normally, I try not to let the combine sway me much at all. He was probably the one that it swayed me the most because it was like, oh, this is a guy that I would take in the top 40. On tape. And then you go to the combine and he's the worst offensive lineman athlete in the history of the world. And you're like, holy cow, how's he going to stay in front of people?
Yeah.
He's the worst athlete ever. And it's like, well, he did on tape and should have trusted it. That's the name of the podcast, Trust the Tape. But it cost him a lot of money. I guarantee you he goes 30 or 40 picks sooner if he just doesn't work out at the combine. Just don't work out. You know what your times are. You've been training for it. If you know it's going to be that bad, just say, hey, you guys have my tape. I'm going to do the interviews and the medicals, and then teams are going to assume, oh, he wasn't going to test well. They weren't going to assume that bad.
Yeah.
They weren't.
I mean, that's horrible. And apparently he'd been working the bench hard and working his sprints and his cardio, and he showed up like, yeah, I'm going to get at least 16 on this bench press, and it was 14, and he ran so much slower. So, I mean, how do you contextualize that? If a guy works out like that and he's got great film, how often are those guys great? You know, it's obvious if you work out like that and you have horrible film, you have no chance, and you should just go directly to the CFL and pray you have a chance there.
I think you're just playing an odds game. Like, for instance, one of the times that it burned me, remember Tease Tabor, the Florida cornerback?
Sure do.
I thought he was a really good player. And then he ran in the, I think, high 4.6s in the 40-yard dash. And it's hard to find NFL corners that run near 4.7 that make it. There's a very few, and you can name some examples of really good players that didn't run well, but for the most part, they don't. But I was just like, you know what? I like his tape. Staying with it. That dude's a player. And he didn't make it. And most corners that can't run don't make it. But with offensive line, it's probably not as important. Corner, a lot of times I have to cover that guy. If he runs a 4.3 and I run a 4.7, we got a problem. But with an offensive lineman, I don't have to outrun the defensive end. I just have to stay between him and my quarterback.
Travis Frederick.
Really?
Travis Frederick was a terrible tester coming out of Wisconsin. All kinds of speed problems. Issue. Everybody had him in the third round. Dallas took him in the first.
What's that feel like when you are overwhelmed in the physical strength department of that position? Is it a massive disadvantage? Or, I mean, you played the position. You know what that felt like when guys were significantly stronger and when you were evenly matched strength. How difficult is that to overcome to play at a very high level, which Orlando Brown Jr. is?
Well, Orlando Brown has learned he's a massive man, as we've talked about, though, and he's one of those guys that can engulf you. It's kind of like, it's like fighting a war in Russia. It opens up and then it closes behind you. You know, you're going to lose a campaign if you fight in Russia.
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay, Combine is underway, of course, today. Daniel Jeremiah here in the NFL Network. He did great. We were talking last week about how Mel Kiper Jr. had said, oh, yeah, there's 30 wide receivers that go in the first three rounds. You're like, it's a numbers game. Probably ain't happening, Mel. But appreciate the heads up on how many good wide receivers there are. Well, Daniel Jeremiah had a piece that came out today. He has graded 27 different wide receivers with top three round grades. So
that's a massive number.
That's like twice as many as the Michael Gallup draft, isn't it? I mean, this is an absurd amount of players. So would it be a mistake in your guys' eyes to not come out of this year's draft with a wide receiver, considering how many there are and the value you might be able to get? How far do those wide receivers go? Fourth or fifth round? Will there be third round of graded guys in the sixth round? Holy crap.
I don't know, in the sixth. Maybe in the fifth.
Fifth, probably.
Yeah, fifth for sure.
There, it is. It's a super deep wide receiver draft, and without knowing what happens with Randall Cobb, and even if you bring him back on a one-year deal, I think you could definitely upgrade the back end of the roster where you've got guys like Tavon Austin or Cedric Wilson or whoever scrapping for roster spots. You could probably find an upgrade to that in the
round. Other teams bring receivers off the bench who are dangerous.
Yeah.
I don't know when the Cowboys do that often.
Not at all.
Seen it.
Tavon.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, yeah. A veteran, you know, kind of gadget guy who's a little bit hurt too much. But yeah, if you could draft a guy and he's available, you know, to replace Randall Cobb or Amari Cooper or just providing depth, that'd be a huge win. I'd rather be fishing out of that pond than, wow, where are our needs and who's the best guy available? Forget that. Mike Fisher's coming up next here in the G-Bag Nation. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. Hope you're having a good day. Mike Fisher set to join us, get us the very latest, as it's a big day of news with the Combine going on and Mark Cuban stirring it up once again. What does this all mean? Segment's brought to you by My Computer Career. And it's brought to you by the Frankels. If you're hurt in an accident, it's not your fault. Call the office of Frankel and Frankel, 214-333-3333, or go online to frankelfirm.com.
Pardon. He's in the building!
What's up, Fish?
Good afternoon, G's.
How the heck are you?
I'm good. If I'm a Cowboy fan right now, I'm feeling a little jittery. It doesn't seem like the system is working for you right now, at least in terms of giving you immediate answers on your top two free agent priorities, and that, of course, Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper. And like always, you know, it'll all work out, and everybody will sign, and everybody will play, and the Cowboys will win eight games or more or whatever. But the CBA disarray, which in the big picture is going to also work out great. It's great that the CBA is is closer to getting done than any of us thought it would be, but it's not done. And then the fact that it's close to getting done is causing the Cowboys to just kind of sit on their hands. Stephen Jones telling the VFW media today in Indianapolis that we're not going to move forward on a Dak Prescott negotiation or deal. We're not going to move forward on an Amari Cooper negotiation or deal until we know more about where the CBA is. And so we just got more and more question marks every day that unfolds.
It's pretty clear, though, that they could be using that indirectly as leverage, right? Like, wow.
Unless we get to, and the date was supposed to be March 10th, the tag deadline. ESPN was first to report that they may be moving that to March 12th, which we'll get into in a minute here. But if there is a CBA agreement, then you can only tag one of them, at which point you either have a good kind of pressure or a bad kind of pressure to hurry up and get the other one, would be Amari, done, or you lose him altogether. So I think I understand why the Cowboys would just sit back and say, let's wait, because I think we know that the salary cap number is going to be about $200 million, but we don't know that for sure. We don't know what the deadline dates are for sure. And so I understand why you wait, but I also understand why it makes everybody jittery.
Mike, why are we letting them off the hook? Well, I mean, this is using this CBA thing as an excuse. You know, this shouldn't be about, this gives them a little bit of a like, oh, well, hey, we have to wait. We have to see. This is something that should have been done a while ago, and they just haven't done that. This is letting them off the hook.
Yeah, you could, in fact, make the argument. I'm willing to consider it that way, I guess. You could make the argument that the fact that things are in disarray, let the other teams be in disarray. Let the other 31 teams not be able to make up their minds, and you do what you're going to do anyway. So I get that, Brian, and I do agree with you on September with Dak, that if you're sitting there at 34 APY and you're close to a deal. Now, by the way, just the 34 APY, million APY doesn't make you close, because what about the years and what about the guarantees? But it's been suggested now, especially by Jerry's coming on the Fan a couple weeks in September and saying imminent, the deal's imminent. So it's been suggested that they must have had an agreement on years. They must have had an agreement on guarantees, or at least close to it. So, Brian, where you're going to win this one is when Dak put the pen down and said no to $34 million. Should Stephen have said, okay, fine, you got me, 35. Now let's go play football. And if Dak would have answered yes to 35, then you absolutely win that argument. We don't really know about where Amari Cooper is. There was that early report at the beginning of last summer that he had asked for something outrageous, and the Cowboys came back and told us, no, that's not true. So we don't know what those numbers are. We just know that in Amari's mind, every week that he waited, the number went up, although we can make the argument here that every week that he played poorly, the number was stagnant.
Mike, do you think they're waiting on Amari, that they really had no intention of assigning Amari Cooper? Do you think this is like after what they heard all year long about him, what Jerry and Steven had heard in meetings, that maybe that, you know what, hey, we got him, we used him for a year, we're just going to move on? Is there a possibility of that?
Okay, let's the two of us work on an educated guess here. That whether you have one tag or two or whatever, that the Cowboys would love to sign Dak Prescott at an APY that isn't close to 40, and then would be perfectly fine transitioning tagging Amari Cooper, which is what, $13.6 million, I believe?
Wow, it's a heck of a bargain.
If you think that Amari Cooper is a perennial Pro Bowler, and for all his inconsistencies, he is a perennial Pro Bowler, then $13.6 million for 1 year of doing what Brian's suggesting here, which is, we're not sure, Amari. We're just not sure. So let's $13.6 million you for 1 year, and let's all get more sure. Yeah, I think that is a top of the choice option for the Cowboys. I think that is in the Cowboys' thinking, yes. Although, again, now the CBA puts all that up to some level of dishevelment, we might say.
It's Mike Fisher here with us in the G-Bag Nation. Stephen Jones is talking out there at the Combine, Fish.
Yeah, and he's going over a bunch of stuff, emphasizing defense in the draft. You know what I think about that, Gavin, right?
Yeah.
Don't emphasize a position.
Take the BPA.
That's so stupid. Just and what I've called it for years, I know you professionals call it BPA, but I had so much fun over the course of the last 30 years on the radio calling it BAA.
Best ass available. Yeah.
Yeah, just so I
got me through college.
so I could make a funny noise. But, boy, I hate it when my team, your team, anybody's team says, well, we really need to draft defensive linemen. And then we go to the story. I think it's the best story of all on trying to tell us how wrong that is. And it's the Shady McCoy story in Dallas. Brian, where were you for Shady McCoy's draft?
What year was that?
Let's see.
I can't remember what I had for lunch today.
I know. 2009.
Okay, Marion Barber was here, and boy, he was unstoppable.
Okay.
And was it Felix Jones? Was it
Felix Jones? Felix was here, yeah.
Yeah, Felix here, yeah.
Okay, so the Cowboys going to that draft, was it 2009, Jeffrey?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
And I believe they had a high second-round grade on Shady McCoy. And boy, were they right. And then they get to their pick, and he would have been a steal wherever they got to, and somebody in the building said, what in the world would we ever need Shady McCoy for? We have Jones, and we have Barber.
I think they said too high to take a running back.
Yeah.
Well, that was before, yeah, not in those days. So only that's in the Jeffrey days. But in those days, we didn't think of it that way. And by gosh, you know, what do you need Shady McCoy for when you already have these two tremendous players? And a year and a half later, Marion Barber was out of football. And 2 years later, Jones was out of football. And Shady McCoy is still playing.
Yeah.
If Shady McCoy would have played for Dallas, they wouldn't have needed a running back for 10 years. And so don't draft position, Stephen. Please do yourself a favor and draft whatever. Hey, don't you think on paper they don't need a linebacker? What do they need a linebacker for? They got Jalen, they got Layton, and they got Sean Lee. Except Sean Lee has some leverage and has the option of leaving if he wants to. Leighton Vander Esch just had neck surgery, and Jalen Smith needs to play way better than he did last year. So if you're sitting there at 17 and you don't need a linebacker, but the next Dick Butkus is sitting there at 17, I'd take him.
Absolutely, Fish. I think you'd been running circles around this front office over the last couple years. Before that, they were on a great run. Hopefully they can get back to that great run. They need to, right? I mean, three negative drafts in a row would sink any franchise, and I think we're starting to see the signs of it.
You know, one of the things I think they've done well in the first round is they don't draft for need. They, by and large, I think, maybe Mo Claiborne, the move up for Mo Claiborne, maybe that was, hey, we're going to get the next Deion Sanders and fill a need. But otherwise, you know, who needed a center? But, you know, they drafted the guy that they thought was best after shuffling around a little bit. The other tendency, of course, that we've chronicled a lot is how, and this has got to be Jerry-driven, where they like to roll the dice in the second round. And maybe a little less rolling the dice and a little more, you know, just go off your board. You don't have to take a blue light special. You don't have to get somebody that Rod Marinelli had coffee with in the lobby. Just go straight off your board. Maybe that would help them in the second round go back to Gavin where you want him to go.
Fish, why did Mark Cuban lose his mind this weekend?
Hey, we're getting this, and I've been chronicling this for 20 years, so I feel fairly qualified here. I'm seeing a lot of people, including media people on Twitter, saying, well, he's acting like it was the seventh game of the NBA Finals in Atlanta.
Calvin Watkins.
Yeah, and with all due respect to Calvin, who's a friend of ours and a fine sportsman, it has nothing to do with Atlanta. This has nothing to do with the Hawks. This has nothing to do with the Maverick player who didn't step out of bounds. This has nothing to do with Jalen Brunson getting his shoulder broken and the referees barely notice. This has nothing to do with the weird goaltend putback inadvertent whistle misapplication of the rules. This is a 20-year campaign that Mark Cuban has waged a lot of times behind the scenes. And again, I see media people ripping him because he's going in front of the curtain now, but they don't understand how many meetings he sat there with boards of directors and boring old men and fat old rich guys and the late, great David Stern, and trying to tell them, we are letting the officials run their own business. There's no there's no credibility with them, and there's no accountability with them. And then the old Dairy Queen thing, and if you're old enough to remember this, the whole point of the Dairy Queen was a gentleman named Ed T. Rush. Gavin, you remember him, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's Ed Rush, okay.
So Ed Rush retires from being a ref, and, you know, well, what are we going to do with the retired ref? Well, let's put him in charge of the refs. Let's make him – he became the CEO of the refs, even though, God bless Ed, he wasn't a CEO. He was a ref. He was a gym coach. He's a ref. He's not a boss. He's not a trainer. He's not a CEO. He's none of those things. And I interviewed him 20 years ago and talked to him about this. And hell of a nice guy, but not somebody that you would pick, I don't think, to run your company. And that's what Cuban said. I wouldn't pick Ed Rush. I wouldn't let Ed Rush manage a Dairy Queen. That's where that came from. And the next thing you know, Dairy Queen's getting a lot of publicity and all the rest. But Cuban's efforts are about organizing the officiating, making them responsible, proper training, proper grading. What do we do when they make a mistake? What do we do instead of what we have now, which is and has been for not just Cuban's 20 years, but certainly before that, kind of anarchy in the way the officials do their business separate from the NBA. That's what this is about. This isn't about Cuban being a sore loser. This isn't about a call in a Hawks game. This is way bigger picture than that, guys.
All right, Fish. Awesome report on that. Appreciate the insights. Anything else before we let you go?
It looks like Luka is in tonight, I guess. Porzingis is in tonight, too. Timberwolves in town. I'll be there. Come say hi. The Mavericks, this is how quickly this season has gone. It's been a fun season and a good season. Only 11 home games left. So come down and see us at the AAC, and Gavin Spittle will buy you a Frosty.
11 home games left. Should win at least 4 of them. Good stuff, Fish. Take care. He's at Fish Sports on Twitter. I just can't help it, you know? There's just a vein of snark. It runs right up my spine. It just comes flying out my mouth sometimes. But yeah, I'm sure they're going to get it fixed. Okay, when we come back, baseball stuff, Rangers left fielder reflecting on the coach who helped him harness the Mamba mentality. Which Ranger has it? It's next in the G-Bag Nation. Alrighty, thank you, Lucius. It's time for some baseball stuff with us, the G-Bag Nation, here on 105.3 The Fan. Just had a report from Mike Fisher. And that was interesting, you know, the stuff about Mark Cuban. You know, it's kind of like the Mike Fiers thing. That's what I was thinking about, where Mike Fiers was trying to tell a bunch of people, no, the Astros cheated. They took this world and nobody would pick it up. He felt like, man, I've tried to explain this to enough people. I got to go public with it. So maybe that's a frustrated place Mark Cuban was in, that it was building. I've been asking. I've been trying to be nice with Adam Silver. We got a new commissioner. I've been trying to turn over a new leaf. You know, a bunch of embarrassing things happened with my organization 2 years ago, and I haven't pretty much said anything since. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons that Mark Cuban may have resolved to not talk like this. It was 9 years ago. Dirk was like, dude, it makes it harder on us if you're talking about the refs all the time. So maybe it's been building, and Mark really, really, really didn't want to say anything, but it's his strong belief that, you know, that nothing is going to improve unless he makes a mess out of it.
Well, it changed the, you know, again, it's the Atlanta Hawks. It's a game you played poorly down the stretch. You should have won. You beat them here without those players. You should have done it again. But here, you're right. Maybe it's like, okay, I'm just going to take this platform to really unload. If people don't want to change.
No.
People in, like, the NFL office, Major League, they don't want to change.
No.
They just want to keep rolling, just keep stamping things out, just keep putting it out there. But he's like, no, we need to change this now. And that was his platform to do it.
Yeah, and you know, maybe we're giving him too much credit, or I'm giving him too much credit with
that
scenario.
I don't think you are.
Maybe,
I don't think you are.
Maybe he's just, you know, the same overgrown child who can't handle losing. And when you get all worked up about losing, you come up with a crafty narrative because you're a smart guy. Maybe that's all that we have. I don't know. I do want to be as fair to him as possible, but also consider his track record on
these
things.
It looked like the replay didn't work. It looked like, and the rule you're talking about, the whistle blows, stop.
Yeah.
That's everything.
Yeah,
nothing
should
happens
count.
After the whistle blows. That's what we're taught.
Uh-huh.
And he's trying to bring that point.
That's a very, very good point. Yeah. And what's it called when your buddies are, is it nepotism?
It's family members.
Okay.
That's hiring family members is what that is.
It's kind of like that.
Yeah, and
you know,
they're family. You're on these guys all the time.
The referee fraternity or brotherhood or or whatever. Okay, let's do this other baseball stuff with us right here. Man, I had my eye on the soccer channel real quick because it looked like Liverpool was going to lose their first game of the year. They were down, but look, they're so dang good. They said, no,
West
we're not
Ham.
Losing. We're not losing. How about Salah on the 68th minute? Bang, we're tied.
The Hammers.
What are you doing?
You know, a little Where 16 seconds stuff? On. So that, yeah, it's, well, this was very exciting. Soccer
they
fans.
Lost all year.
Yeah, if they have it recorded, I'm not gonna tell you. I might have already spoiled it. That's my bad, but yeah. Liverpool was in trouble.
I want to update you on something way more important. One little fragment of the Leaning Tower of Dallas, I just watched it fall.
Oh, no.
One very small fragment, but that's the biggest piece I've seen come off that building.
They're coming up on 6 hours, and it looks like they've demolished 3/4 of the top floor. So it looks like they're going to go to about 7 hours per floor, and they're about 1, 2, 6. Looks like 42 to 49 hours of work, I'm predicting, in 2 days.
When are we going to see the spotlights? That's what I want, the big floodlights on the structure itself with the wrecking
with the
ball going into it.
All I know is I would be comfortable as a squatter on the third floor of that building for the next 48 hours.
You're not going anywhere?
I would feel fine about it.
Okay, the baseball stuff here. It is 2/24, a day that's been chosen to put a spotlight on Kobe. And this story will put a little bit of a spotlight on Kobe here for you, because there is a Rangers player who's trying to harness that Mamba mentality. I was talking with my mom earlier on text, and she said she watched the whole thing and it tore her up. And I was looking on Jane Slater's Twitter, and you know, she says it was crushing her. So I'm looking forward to getting home and seeing some of the highlights of these speeches. Shaq won G-Bag of the Day over an hour ago for his Kobe memorial, talking about when Kobe gained his respect. But, yeah, it's Rangers left fielder Willie Calhoun talking about the person in the Rangers organization that most helped him develop the Mamba mentality. Said after the 2018 season, which was a massive disappointment for him, former coach Jace Tingler helped him change the trajectory of his career. Story in the morning news here. He talks about the day of Kobe passing away, talking about Tingler here. He was a huge impact on my life. He pushed me like nobody ever has. He has the Mamba mentality more than anyone I've ever known. We talked about Kobe and shared our emotions, but I just wanted to thank him for everything he put me through. I feel like I've lived 25 years, but I've done all my growing in the last 2.5 years. You know, common theme, I think. Some people aren't talented enough that if they don't get any of that by age 16 or 17, they're going to wash out, right? You don't go to college or you fail in college and you're done. Some guys like Willie Calhoun are so damn talented all the way until 22, 23 years old. It's like, whatever. You know, I play 3-hole. Give me a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
You know, but for him, it was like, okay, you might not get the big league dream. But he was so talented, he figured I can be kind of chubby and get this big league dream going anyway.
Yeah.
Well, after the 2018 season, it kind of dawned on him that he was actually going to have to try hard to make his big league dream come true.
After seeing him, where were we when I saw him? I don't remember. But he's not a fat kid anymore. Yeah. I could see why he might have been comfortable being hefty. Because when you're 5'8 and you're no longer hefty, you just look at him and you're like, that's not a power hitter.
Yeah.
That little guy, he's not going to hit it far.
Yeah.
But I would imagine being in better shape will be helpful.
Yeah. I used to tell my buddies in pickup basketball, I was playing the big man game. They're like, dude, you're 5'11. I'm like, I know, but check out this beer gut, dude. You don't want to come anywhere near you.
I'll move you, buddy.
Back you down, back you down.
Yeah. I'm sure not staying in front of you on the perimeter. So this is my only option down here. Get used to it. But yeah, Willie Calhoun, you know, this story is in the morning news. Jace Tingler was his guy, and, you know, a guy that got that every day, wake up, do something your future self's going to thank you for, put in all the work, take advantage of your opportunities, live in a way that you won't regret it in the future and think, man, what if I tried a little bit harder? I love stories like this, and, you know, Willie Calhoun continues to be one of my favorite players. Now, as a former fat athlete, he still gets all my support.
And I hope that he's going to turn into a star, because looking at the Rangers right now,
need one.
When you look top to bottom of that lineup, and we've seen what they're projected to do, and it's towards the very bottom of the league. But like, I just flip over to a contender. Take the Astros. Nobody on this team hits as well as Jose Altuve. Nobody on this team hits as well as Alex Bregman, George Springer, Carlos Correa.
I think hold that thought. Okay. For about 3 months.
Okay, go see him. Hold on. Let me go pick a different contender.
I saw what you did. I'll pick a different contender, and
I think you can still go about four deep before you get to the Rangers would have maybe their fifth best hitter, and somebody has to be more than that for whenever this team is going to contend. Somebody has to be more than what they are, and so you're banking on Gallo, and then.
Yeah. At least we're not talking about Odor and Mazzara this year, you know.
At least we're
on to something else. But if it is Calhoun, and I think he's the most talented hitter in that group. You can tell by the way that he saunters into the batter's box and is just sitting there like, okay, what do you got?
Confidence is not a problem.
Not at all.
No, and it's you know, I don't think it's maybe what some people would call overconfidence or, you know, in Odor, he doesn't have the hand-eye coordination, you know, to really be that confident. He struts up there. That's $50 million talking. Calhoun has that same strut making a tenth of that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe.
Whereas Rugi, after each strikeout, just undoes one more button for the next one just to get ready.
But salute to the morning news there for that piece on Willie. Okay, this isn't a Ranger story, but people do love a good story about athletes that compete in rodeos, don't they?
Yes. Yes, they do.
Of course, the great Walt Garrison did it here down there at Mesquite Arena where they now play soccer. Do they still do? They still do rodeo and
they
stuff
have rodeo,
there.
Yeah, Resistol Arena, I think, is what it's called down there.
Okay, okay. Well, this one is a baseball pitcher. Even Arizona Diamondbacks left-hander Madison Bumgarner has been competing in rodeo events. He goes under the alias Mason Saunders.
Okay, I like that. I like that. What's he doing? That's what I want to know. Is he riding bulls?
Team roping competition. Is that where you're riding?
Is he the hind legs or is he the neck?
I don't know.
Team roping, because team roping is difficult. That the neck part people get, but hitting those hind legs, that right there takes some skill.
Which guy has to jump off and then wrestle it? Is that the guy who's going for the neck, or is that the back leg?
That's bulldogging. That's bulldogging itself. Team roping.
Oh, you just pull him out. Yeah, team roping is yank him.
Team roping is secure neck, secure back, and then you pull him down that way.
With bulldogging, do you rope first, or you just grab him by the horns?
You go parallel, and then dive down onto, and then turn and get the calf on the ground.
That's what I was going to do until I realized I couldn't ride a horse or overpower a calf. So that dream was shattered.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to say for Bumgarner, that should be allowed in his contract. I'm just riding a horse and throwing a rope. I'm not on a bull.
Yeah.
I'm not wrestling it. Okay.
No, he's not going full Walt Garrison.
But do you think the team
Those are really cool events, though. I'm not trying to take anything away. And the back leg guy, he's got to drop that lasso down basically to the ground and then lift up.
Exactly. You've got to hit those back legs when the feet are off the ground.
That's tough.
So you got to throw to the back. And it's fascinating work to see those guys, how professional they are and how they're able to do it every single time.
I love the disappointment in the partner's eyes.
Yeah.
When the other guy misses, and the one guy's sitting there and he lets his rope go and he's just like,
bro,
it's very similar to that look you give to me when you have a dip in, and you spit in the cup when I say something.
They do
the same thing. They spit off the horseback, you know, look at the guy like, disgusted. Like, oh, yeah.
Well, old Mason Saunders, aka Madison Bumgarner, did win $26,560, so he's competing at a pretty high level.
He is
at the team roping competition in December, according to a story published Sunday by The Athletic. Bumgarner told the website that he has discreetly competed in rodeos for a while, including in March of last year, 2 days before he pitched for the San Francisco Giants in a Cactus League spring training game. He's been roping since he was 15 or 16. Said he's been at it so long that it's just part of who you are. The 2014 World Series MVP agreed to an $85 million five-year contract with the Diamondbacks in December. Wow, he only got like 16 a year, 17 a year?
He's not the same guy who single-handedly won a World Series anymore.
Okay. That was just a few weeks back. Yeah, he won the rodeo competition just 2 weeks after he had signed that contract. So I don't think the Giants are going to be too bent out of shape about it. Remember that story we had?
D-backs. He's a D-back now.
Remember that story we had 3 or 4 years ago where he was at spring training and nobody knew who he was? And he'd go to like parking lots of grocery stores and set up his fake cow and just be in the back of the parking lot working on his technique. And he was like, they were writing this story about how he was one of the most unassuming and different sort of superstars. He's just kind of in his own world. Going all Western.
I just wonder what happens if he shows up to the yard on a Wednesday and it's like, all right, you ready to take the ball? And it's like, no, had a little mishap over the weekend.
A little rope burn.
I'm missing a finger.
Yeah.
Yeah, rope got me. I'm short a finger. So I got to figure out how to regrip the ball before I can take the mound again.
And the GM's like, well, I've hidden this story here. That's just who you are. Did you also know you're a baseball pitcher?
Well, that's more of a part-time thing. Listen, one's my passion, one I'm good at.
Cowboys Twitter. Do you think that former Cowboy will be signed early, middle, or late in free agency? It's next in the G-Bag Nation.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.